You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. We'll have Shaq and Frank here in a moment as we kick things off in the Premier League. Chelsea taking on Spurs. What a game this turned out to be. It would be Chelsea who'd open the scoring early on, deservedly so. Nice finish from Koulibaly. And then controversy. Spurs would get the equaliser in the second half. It looked like there was a foul on Havertz in the build-up. That wasn't given. It looked like Richarlison was offside as Højbjerg put it into the back of the net. That wasn't given. The goal stood 1-1. That would see quite the altercation between Conte and Tuchel on the sidelines. Wouldn't stay level for long, though, as Reece James would make a nice finish, nicely set up by Raheem Sterling to make it 2-1. And then late on, we're talking injury time. It looked like Cucurella had his hair pulled. The referee, though, didn't give a free kick, didn't give a foul. There was no red card. It came from a corner. The ball went out. It was another corner. That then was taken. Harry Kane scores it. It finishes Chelsea 2, Spurs 2. Thomas Tuchel not happy at the end because Conte didn't look him in the eye as he shook his hand. As a result of the altercation, both managers sent off. Whew. Here's what they had to say after the game.
It's Premier League football and the two managers got involved today because both of us were fighting for our teams and that was it. Nobody got insulted, nobody got hurt, we didn't have a fist fight and something. So for me it's not a big deal, it was part of it today and it boiled of course and it heated up, but nothing bad. And it was, I don't know, it was today was part of the game, it's like this.
This is not a big problem. I think this is not important. If there is a problem, the problem is between me and the other coach, not for the others.
You enjoyed it, didn't you?
Yes, and I think he enjoyed it as well. It was nothing bad, guys, nothing bad.
It's off.
So do you have more of a problem with the referee? Cause,
today?
Yeah, today.
Absolutely, yes.
Generally as well, because some of the fans think that he's made a few bad decisions against Chelsea and he's done that.
I don't think that some of the fans think that. I can assure you that the whole dressing room of us, every single person thinks that. And I cannot understand how the first goal is not offside. Honestly, we also have VAR to help making the right decisions. Since when can players be pulled at their hair? Since when is that? And if he does not see it, I don't blame him. I didn't see it. But we have people at VAR who check this, and then you see it. And then what? And then how can this not be a free kick? And how can it not be a red card? How?
I never spoke about the referee decision. Never. Never.
I think you might not be able to go to Leeds.
So, good. I cannot coach, but the referee can whistle the next game. Good.
That was in reference to him being suspended then for the next game because of the red card. Obviously, newspapers, media loving what took place on the touchline. London brawling, boiling point, touchline aggro, tug of war between the two coaches. Now we can welcome in Frank LaBeouf and Shaq at Hislop.
By the way, I'll have that bit. I'll have that bit. I've never talked about a referee ever. I'm not having that at all. That's not a deep dig to find something that he's done. But, you know, I don't condone. Look, we don't. I say condone as if it's something. There's no fisticuffs. It's not an ideal world, I'm sure, for the Premier League watching the two managers go at it. But it wasn't it great to see the passion.
No, just the whole game was great. It escalated into the second half. It's what you want from a match. Even you don't have a horse in this race, but just as a football fan, it's what you want to see.
Yeah, and it was a better performance in the second half from Tottenham. In the first half, the first 5 minutes, they were excellent. I thought, oh my God, they're having a go at Chelsea. And then Chelsea really took over. They passed it really well, Chelsea. And I'm telling you, one of the things was Reece James on Heung-Min Son. If Heung-Min Son had taken a bathroom break during a game, he's gone and standing outside the door. He didn't let him out of sight. He got the booking for the cynical foul. That was the one time he got away. But Tuchel got his tactics spot on with how they played Heung-Min Son. Even Harry Kane, who's normally the most astute passer of the ball in the Tottenham team, couldn't hold it up. They were coming in, they were nicking it off him. Tottenham couldn't get any passes going. But I think I said a couple of days ago on the show, the one thing that he's got in his armoury now, Antonio Conte, when they're getting bossed, when a game's not going their way, he can turn to his bench. Bissouma, Lucas Moura, Perisic, Richarlison. That's a different ball game for him to last year. Those are players that can come on and make a difference and change a game. And that's what he did. He went to his bench, he changed the shape, and it allowed Tottenham to get a little bit more of a foothold in the game. But at 2-1 up, Chelsea will be looking at themselves, even with the referee, and saying, we should have saw that out.
Before we go to Frank, because I just want to get one more objective opinion before we hear what Frank has to say. it is Chelsea, hat one. Shaq, this was fun, wasn't it?
It was a great game. It really was a great game of football. It had everything. And I like the managers don't make an awful lot of that kind of flare-up at the end of the game. That's when tempers are high, emotions are running high as well. But just in terms of just pure football, I still wondered about Chelsea and whether they had enough firepower to finish top four. But they didn't need it on the day. And their football, in every single respect, was outstanding.
Right then, Frank, did you enjoy it as much as we did?
I did, and I'm frustrated in the same way. In the same way, because I think football can be unfair, but it's why we love football. Because even if you are the best, even if you are dominant, you cannot ensure that you're going to win or draw. You can even lose it. And one point about Spurs, you know, to show you that it can be objective. A team like Spurs, last season, would have lost like 4 or 5 nil today. That's the big change for the Spurs. They're physically, they're tactically better than they used to be, and it's why they can hope to finish in the first four spots. Now, talking about Chelsea, I think Chelsea had a fantastic game. Again, I think they should have finished their chances better, Sterling, Mason Mount. But overall, I enjoy Chelsea. Physically, comparing to last week, that was a fantastic game. They did everything they had to do, like Craig mentioned. Tactically, Tuchel handled the game very well. And, you know, I don't care about what happened on the touchline. I'm only interested about what I saw today in the game. And I have to say that, we'll have to talk about Mr. Taylor and the VAR. People in the cabin, they were napping. Because, of course, the first goal should have been disallowed.
But before we go to that, Chelsea's problems, we talked about the problem. We know they want a striker. We know Timo Werner's gone, couldn't cut the mustard. We know Lukaku's gone, didn't want to be there. But that's a worry when you play so well. You score two goals, but think about it. It was two mistakes, really. Right. The set piece was awful marking from Spurs, and then Kulusevski gives it away for the Reece James goal, which was a great goal. But it wasn't two pieces of brilliance from Chelsea. They played brilliant up until that final third, but there's why they're going to be off the mark unless they go out before the end of August and get a striker. Think about the chance that Havertz missed with the cross from James. A brilliant cross. He was 6 yards out. He didn't even hit the target. And that's just going to frustrate the manager more and more when you're playing as well as that, and they did play really well today, but it looks a little flat in the final third. Yes, Raheem Sterling's movement was good, but when you don't have that clinical finisher, all that good play allows teams like Tottenham to get back in it. I mean, as Frank said, Tottenham could have been buried.
Yes.
They could have been. It was so one-sided up until he made all those changes. And that's Chelsea's big... And I think he'll be in there to Todd Boehly the next 40 hours saying, listen, that when we play that, we need somebody to finish. And if that doesn't convince the ownership to go out and buy the striker that they need, I don't know what will.
So then, Frank, a number of questionable decisions going against Chelsea today. Which one had you the most frustrated?
Almost all of them, because I think we have to be fair. I think Bentancur touched the ball when he tackled Havertz, and he touched the ball, but he touched the legs of the players, therefore, and balanced the players, so I think it was a foul. But for me, Richarlison is blinding Mendy is maybe in the position of a yellow, of offside, so it should be as well. It should be as well signaled by the coach and the VAR, and therefore disallowed. And we have to come back on the corner kick before the second goal, where Cucurella is pulled over because he has long hair, but because he's marking very well, I think it's Romero. And Romero should have been yellow carded. Therefore, it should have been a free kick for Chelsea. Therefore, no second corner kick. I don't know if somebody can help me out about that and the second law, but if there is a yellow card on Romero that we can see, there is a free kick because the ball is playing. There is a free kick against Tottenham. Therefore, you don't have the second corner kick. And then you don't have a draw from Spurs.
Well, I'll help you out on that, Frank. What this is how it works here with this. Well, let's take the Cucurella one. Now, I don't know what provisions are in the laws of the game to say what's violent conduct and what's
not. Well, I reached out to Peter Walsh, and he said that's violent conduct, right. Should be a red card.
I would imagine so, but I don't think pulling the hair is actually in the
right.
But how it's going to work with the VAR, and I was telling you this earlier, is once Anthony Taylor missed it, once VAR saw it and looked at it, once he didn't deem it violent conduct, and that was his choice, so no red card, it can't then be called for a free kick, mm-hmm. because it's not in the act of scoring a goal. So only that could have been pulled back with VAR if a goal had been scored and then a free kick could have been given. But once he doesn't deem it violent conduct, then a free kick cannot be given because there's no goal. And otherwise, VAR would be looking at every little free kick that was missed by the referee. And that's the reason that one wasn't given as a free kick and the corner was taken, is because for some reason, if Peter Walton's saying it's in the laws of the game, it's violent conduct, and the VAR deemed it not to be, I can't answer the question, why not? But that's the reason a free kick wasn't given. To go back to the first goal, or the first Tottenham goal, I don't think it should have been pulled back. I think there is a clear mistake by Anthony Taylor at real time, and the Bentancur challenge. That's a foul. However, in the passage of play that leads up to the goal being scored, Chelsea won the ball back. They made two passes in their own box, and then Jorginho gave the ball away.
So what about the Richarlison point that Frank made?
Well, I get it, and he's in an offside position, and I'm sure Shaq's got a view in this for 100%. I personally don't think... I still think Edward Mendy has a clear view of the ball. I don't deny Richarlison's in an offside position, but I don't think he's blocking Edward Mendy's view. And he still makes a good enough effort, in my opinion, to get there. So I didn't have a huge problem with that.
Before we get Frank's retort, I just want to hear Shaka's point first, Frank.
Fair.
Thank you.
On the offside, that has to be disallowed. We had this discussion last season, and I can't remember the exact game, but similar circumstance. Player standing in an offside position. The excuse that was offered, or the reason that was offered last season, was that the player was some 16 yards away from the goalkeeper, pretty similar to Richarlison this time around. It's simple. He's in an offside position that he's not supposed to be in. He's in the goalkeeper's field of vision, so he's, whether you like it or not, he's affecting Mendy's view. Mendy has to make a decision as to whether Richarlison's going to get a touch, because of course, from where Mendy's standing, he can't make that assumption or that judgment that he's offside. So he's already in two minds once that ball is struck. So he's affecting the goalkeeper. Whether it's directly in blocking his field of vision, he's affecting the decision-making and how Mendy moves for the ball. So it has to get called back. And the silly thing I don't know if it's a silly thing, but I agree with Craig in that I don't think you call the play all the way back for the initial foul on Havertz. But it gives you an out. The Richarlison offside gives you an excuse. It gives you another reason just to disallow the goal, calm tempers, and somehow you get it right. And both times, between Anthony Taylor and the VAR, they chose not to. So they are deserving of all the criticism that they're now getting.
But you can't call that back for you can't call that back for the challenge on Bentancur once Chelsea win the ball back. But once Chelsea win the ball back, that's null and void.
I agree. I'm fine with that. I have no problem with that.
It's the Cucurella one. I as I said to you, I wasn't 100% because I don't think that's, well, to my knowledge, it's not in the laws.
Mark Clatterburg says that it's not a red card because both players are pulling at each other.
Well, I did think there was a bit, there was some six and two threes involved. However, is pulling somebody's hair violent conduct? I don't know. They've deemed it, VAR has deemed it not to be.
Here's my interpretation of that. Had that been a defender on a striker, that would have been a penalty, no question. And we've seen that time and time again over the last three or four years. We've applauded that time and time again over the last three or four years, where a defender is getting overly physical with a striker in the box, whether they're going to get on the end of the ball or not. And so they've drawn their line in the sand as far as that goes. So to have to see Cucurella's hair being pulled in the way that it is, and it just be ignored, and we start talking about violent conduct I think it's disingenuous. It's a foul.
But I need to look at it again closely. But maybe their assertion on it, an analysis of it, is the initial. Infringement was Cucurella with the pulling on Romero.
Right.
And then the second one...
And of course, the difference between this and a penalty call is that VAR can check for a penalty, obviously can't check for a foul unless they think it's going to be a red card. And then we've gone down that road before, obviously.
Yeah. Anyway, and then obviously Chelsea don't defend the next corner very well and Harry Kane scores, but... I mean, it had a little bit of everything, didn't it? And, you know, Anthony Taylor, one of the better referees around, certainly in England, there's no doubt about that. I'm not sure who was in the VAR booth today, won't be the most popular person. But there was certainly a lot of talking points. But, at least they've been consistent. If Shaq said they had a similar one last year with a player that was a long way from goal, and that's the way they're refereeing it, I don't know. I don't know, but VAR has deemed all those decisions not worthy of chopping the goals off.
Overall, how frustrating is it just to take a point from this game, Frank?
Oh, well, big time. Big time, because the way they played. I mean, I texted our producer like 10 minutes before the end of the game asking if Harry Kane was playing today. Well, he definitely did.
So that was your fault, Frank. You gave it the kiss of death.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But the thing is, they played so well. You know, comparing to last game, last week, when they were the Chelsea that we knew from last season and maybe the season before. But what we saw today was composure in every department. Everything they did, technically, physically, tactically, was almost perfect because they didn't score enough goals and they should have had. But at the end of the day, it's frustrating because they should have won that game, like, I would say, 4-2 or 5-2. But that's, I agree with Craig, if Mr. Todd Boehly doesn't see that he needs a striker, he shouldn't go to Stamford Bridge again, you know, because that's what it is. They need a big striker to finish their action to make sure they're going to easily finish a game that it was 95% perfect. So yes, it was frustrating, but it's at the same time people have to be very optimistic. You know, I know some of our pundits, they say that Chelsea was going to finish sixth, and I know that Craig and Shaka don't put them in the first four, but with the game what we see today, if they carry on playing like that, then of course they're going to finish before Arsenal and before Tottenham, and don't even talk about Manchester United. So, but they can finish in the third place easily if they carry on playing like that.
Never text a producer, Frank. Never. particularly today's producer, it's a schoolboy error because you'll get a flurry of text backs.
Chelsea then and Spurs flurry. With 4 points apiece after the opening two matches. Meanwhile, Manchester United bottom. Up the table, 0 points. And before we get to that, ESPN FC with you then tomorrow. Mark Clattenburg will be joining us to give us his views on those controversial calls. Manchester United then, as I mentioned then, bottom at the table, 0 points. They've been, everyone and anyone has been slating them over the last 24 hours. You weren't with us yesterday, Craig, for your reaction. A lot of people, for some reason, are desperate to hear what you have to say about it all.
Yeah. I'll never get that in my house. Nobody's desperate to tell me to shut up. It's going well, isn't it? It's going well for old Eric, isn't it?
Goodness me.
Is he on a plane yet to Amsterdam or what?
Wow.
He's in hiding. He's in hiding in Amsterdam.
Yesterday was a new low, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a new low. And before, the one thing I would say, before we start about the Glazers, before we start about Murto and Arnold and all these people and previously Ed Woodward, and before we talk about recruitment and money, and there's been a lot of money spent at Man United, mm-hmm. just badly, by people who shouldn't have been spending the money. Non-football people, and hence they are where they are. But before we go down that route, let's just say, to a man, those players are a disgrace to their profession. And I tell you why. We can all lose games, can all have bad performances, but individually, would any of those Brentford players really have got in a Man United team? Individually. But they are super hungry. They want to be in the Premier League second season around. I mean, Shaw's an international. You know, Maguire's played in World Cup semi-finals. Dalot's an international. Jadon Sancho's not worth a million, never mind 100 million at the moment. Marcus Rashford, we talked in the end of the PSG want him. That was the discussion we had at the end of the week. 120 million, their valuation. He wouldn't go to one of the newly promoted teams in the Premier League. And obviously Ronaldo's up front and he's frustrated and he never shakes the manager's hand and blah, blah, blah. That's been a soap story. And David De Gea had an absolute nightmare. But how can you, even if you say this is a bad Man United team, I get it. It's an awful Man United team, but it's Brentford. No second balls, no closing down, no fight, no passion. Where's this pressing game that Erik ten Hag said we're going to be seeing this? Oh, his new tactics. Where's it been? Just outplayed by Brentford, outfought. That doesn't need 500 million in transfer market to put right. That doesn't need new players. That needs new attitude. And quite frankly, these players, it just seems these players, for some reason, I don't know, they just are reluctant to go on a field and do the basics. I mean, it's quite scary. I get it. I understand they need a centre-half in your midfield, they need this, they need a striker, they need this. But you don't need that to outrun, outfight and outplay Brentford. You don't. You might do if you're Nottingham Forest. You might do if you're Bournemouth and Fulham and Southampton and Everton. All those teams that maybe Brentford were... But it's Manchester United with international footballers across the board. That's not a lack of talent. That's a lack of application.
So does it matter who's in charge? Could you have Klopp? Could you have Guardiola? Could you have Ancelotti? Could you have anyone there? Is it a complete and utter lost cause in that sense? Because of the players?
I don't know. I mean, ultimately, he's going to have to get a lot of them out. That's going to take time. On the other side of the coin is, you got a new manager coming in. What you got? You got a 5'9" centre-half. You got a substitute left-back and a free transfer from Brentford. Who is a good player? Christian Eriksen. He is a good player. There's no doubt about that. But he's not going to solve all your problems. But that's all they've given him so far. But I don't need new signings to outrun and outfight and close Brentford down. I don't need that. I can do that. I should be able to do that with this team. And they were an utter embarrassment.
Shaka, I think out of every pundit on this show, I would say you have the most optimistic persona. But even with that, it's very difficult, isn't it, to paint any sort of positive picture for Manchester United going forward and how they're going to fix this short term.
Oh, sure it's easy to paint a positive picture. It's always darkest before the dawn. Surely it cannot get any worse than this.
It cannot. It can't get any worse. And then what happened on Saturday?
Yeah, well, no, I really mean it.
Yeah,
I know. Let's be honest. And here's, I take every single one of Craig's points, and he's absolutely right. But you saw something play out during that game, and I often talk about Manchester United's arrogance. Okay, David De Gea at fault for the opening two goals, and at the best of times in a league like this, you do not give any opponent that kind of a head start. But after the second goal goes in, Ronaldo, want-away Ronaldo, by the way, is the only player who is kind of remonstrating with everyone else and saying, one goal turns this tide, one goal changes momentum. Everybody else goes into an absolute shell. That speaks about the lack of leadership, both on the field, and I'm looking at Ten Hag, off the field, because he could have been getting that message to his players at the same time. As far as it getting better for Manchester United, and your question about whether Klopp or Guardiola can turn this around, let's keep in mind the chain of managers that Manchester United have had since Alex Ferguson. David Moyes, Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho, and as much as Mourinho and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer finished second, I thought that was more by luck than by design, particularly the second time around with Solskjaer and the pandemic, etc., etc. And it to me, it speaks to far deeper problems. And I know everybody's been going on about the Glazers and everybody else, but if you're Manchester United, even if you have another $1 billion war chest and you go out to spend, who wants to come to Old Trafford? Mm. Not because of lack of Champions League football, but when you look at the players who've come and left and how they've regressed. If you're Frankie de Jong, why do you leave Barcelona to go to Manchester United when you've seen Marcus Rashford regressing the way that he has, when you've seen a World Cup winner in Paul Pogba regress as he has, when you've seen Bruno Fernandes regress, when you've seen Jadon Sancho regress? That speaks to far greater issues than just the Glazers or the money that they spend. And I'm afraid there's a toxicity in that club that I really don't know what the fix is. And it's deep-rooted, and it'll be a long time in the correcting.
They're on the plane, Liverpool next.
I know.
To be fair. More good news for Eric.
I know. Liverpool next.
I mean, it's early days. That's the only crumb of comfort I can give them. It's early days, but I mean, they're going to bury this manager quickly at this rate.
The thing is, this is crazy. They are making records of nightmares. I think they touched the bottom of it. Where, again, as said Shaka, the toxicity is so big that you don't know how to resolve it. And Ten Hag cannot do almost anything. If the players don't want to run, they don't want to run. It's why he wants them to run, you know, at Carrington, you know, after the game, because they didn't run enough. But it's like all the will that you need to become a leader, to change something in your faith, doesn't exist anymore in any player's soul. So it's complicated for Ten Hag to do anything. Last year, the tree which hid the forest, as we say in French, was De Gea. And when De Gea is not good, that's the result you have. That's what it is, because De Gea made miracles last season. Otherwise, Manchester United would not have done what they did last season. So, in one game, because they are at the nightmare, you see everything you should have seen last season. And we were mentioning about the spirit, about the tactic, about the will of the players. There is nothing. Again, how to solve that problem out is going to be a problem. I don't know if Ten Hag can cope with the situation very quickly, but they need to react, because otherwise they can be relegated, because there is nothing.
They was
the hair's a problem for him. The hair's a problem. I tell you why. Not because he's a bad goalkeeper, because he resurrected his career in the last 18 months. But he's not very good with the ball at his feet. And unfortunately, Ten Hag's one of those managers that wants to build out and play that way and put him under pressure, put his keeper under pressure, like Ederson that gets under pressure, like Alisson gets under pressure. And I don't think he handles that very well. It was interesting that he's already said. Ten Hag's already distanced himself to some extent by saying, they just didn't follow the plan, which I'm 100% behind, because clearly he never sent them out to play that way. And he's obviously not worried about losing some of them, because he's just going to say, they're not burying me.
Right.
They are not burying me. I am going to be intrigued by his next lineup, because I mean, he's going to be throwing darts at the wall to see who plays in that team. If you're Rafael Varane, I mean, I know Rafael Varane's not the... He's not the most... You know, when you see him coming out from the back with the ball, it looks a little bit uncomfortable. But he's a good defender, and he's fast and he's big. But he must be sitting there going, I've won a World Cup, Champions Leagues, I've won all these things, and I can't get in that back four.
Right.
I mean, he must be kicking Ten Hag's door down and saying, there's more to football than Selke playing out from the back. Sometimes you just got to downright defend.
Right.
But my God, I mean, I don't think even in his worst nightmares, the new manager thought it was going to be as bad as it is. But there has to be, I mean, it's so bad, I can't put my finger on it. When I just look at Shaw and Maguire and all these players just looking at each other, Fred, people tell me last year Fred's a really good player. Maybe he is, but just not at this club.
Right.
This club needs better players. Scott McTominay, right? No, nothing against the boy. He's a worker and a grafter. But he's not, and I know he didn't start yesterday, but he's not going to be somebody that's quality enough to lead the Manchester United midfield. I mean, it's a bigger mess than even I thought it was, to be honest with you, at this moment in time.
Reports are, Shaq, that Ten Hag cancelled the players' day off today. They were made to come in, and Brentford players ran 10 miles more than the United ones did, so he made them run that. Does this make any difference in United players' worlds?
Not an awful lot. You know how much I like a day off, Dad, so that should have affected me a little bit. But I'm not sure that all the United players feel similarly. Listen, I agree. Listen, you need to... There's a couple of ways that managers can deal with this, and you know, it's up to the individual manager. Not Nottingham Forest great, and Brian Clough used to famously give the players the entire week off when they had a bad performance and tell them, go spend the week at home with your wife, and that'll teach you. How Ten Hag deals with it is entirely up to him. But like I say, running 10 miles on what was supposed to be a day off, I don't think at all addresses many of the issues within that dressing room. You have highly paid, highly underperforming players. I'm not sure. I'm waiting to see. I'm waiting to see if Ten Hag has the kind of presence that's needed to steer Manchester United right. Because this is a big ask. And right now, as I said earlier, I'm not sure that he answered some of the questions as that were needed in that Brentford game.
Talking about presence, just briefly, I think the time for kids' gloves has long gone. I think the time about worried about losing players has long gone.
Right.
Worried about upsetting Bruno Fernandes or Ronaldo or Maguire, any of them, any of those slackers. I think that is long gone. That ship has sailed, right? If I was Ten Hag, I would be in their face. I would be outing them in the press. I would be, if I had to. No, I told him, no, Bruno Fernandes needs to get his finger out. No, Ronaldo needs to do... The time for just trying to protect these players, I'm trying to find a nice word here, these underperformers, and that has been very nice, the time for trying to protect them and mollycoddle them in press conferences and be nice and worry about upsetting them has long gone.
Right.
This is the gloves are off for this manager. They are off. It is bare fist fighting now to get this right. Because if they took a hammering against Liverpool, and it could happen, it happened last year. I mean, it's not worth thinking about. But I'm afraid the gloves are off for Erik ten Hag, and you're either with him or you're out. And I think if he tries to do it point. A nicey-nicey way, these players are going to throw him under the bus the way almost every other one has gone.
Frank?
To that point, Craig.
Sorry, Shaq.
Sorry.
Go on, Shaq.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, I just wonder if Ten Hag has that presence. And listen, Manchester United have taken over of as global laughing stocks of the Premier League from Arsenal. People used to be having these kind of conversations about Arsenal not too long ago. But you mentioned David De Gea and his inability to play the ball with his feet. Does anybody think that Ten Hag can do as Arteta did and bring in Ramsdale to replace Bernd Leno, a German international, because Bernd Leno wasn't able to play the way that Arteta played with the ball at his feet the way that Arteta did? Do you think that Ten Hag will ditch Bruno Fernandes in the way that Arteta did Aubameyang? And right now, albeit I'm sitting a long way away, I don't think so. And it speaks to who is he? If he's not, then he's not the right person to stay at Manchester United right either.
Right. Final word on this goes to Frank Leboeuf.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think because we are talking about Ten Hag, I think he should have put his foot down at halftime during that game. We can all agree that at 4-0, the game was over. What he did, he changed three players. He substituted three players. I remember a game that I played where we were losing 3 or 4-0 halftime. The coach, and I don't remember who he was, said, "You know what, guys? The shame is on you. Mm. You know, we put the tactic, you didn't follow the tactic, so the shame is on you, so I'm not going to change any player. You're going to finish the game because your friends, the substitute, not going to pay for you. So you are the 11, and you're going to finish at 11, the same player. With the shame is on you." He changed the three players. He put some players out, you know, to try to sort out something. No, they should have paid the whole amount altogether, the 11. And that's where you start marking, you know, like doing something for the sake where you say, "I'm the boss. You didn't want to follow me. I'm gonna put you in public, and then we're gonna work, you know, at Carrington on Monday or on Tuesday because you're shameful."
Just briefly, I know you said last word. On top of everything else, the strip was horrendous.
You didn't like the lime green or whatever it was.
The strip deserved them getting beat 10 there. It's horrendous. But guess what? They're probably making a lot of money out of these strips.
There you go.
Happy days. Clickbait. Yep. Everybody's happy.
Meanwhile, Liverpool in search of their first victory of the season. They're in action on Monday as they take on Crystal Palace, massive favourites. According to the biggest 5-1 on, Palace would be a big shock if they won it 12-1. Take all 3 points from Anfield. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Real Madrid kicked off the defence of their title with a 2-1 victory against Almeria, but they had to come from behind to do so. Ramazani, nice finish from the Almeria attacker to give them a 1-0 lead. It was only in the second half that Real Madrid turned things around. Lucas Vazquez scoring on the hour mark, and then Alaba coming on as a substitute. His first touch was a brilliant free kick to make it 2-1. Craig, we saw Ancelotti initially, of course, bringing in some of the younger players to start, but it was only really when the old guard came on in the second half that this game changed.
Yeah, I was a little perplexed. First day of the season to be not playing your strongest team, but yeah. But he obviously wants guys to get game time sooner rather than later, but there's a risk and reward, and the risk wasn't paying off at half-time, so changes were made, and then further changes were made. Obviously, Luka Modric gaining control of the midfield, which they had anyway, but then he's able to play those passes. He's able to dictate it a little better, and then obviously David Alaba with the free kick. In some sense, it just reminded me exactly of last year's Madrid. Even though there's been a few changes, some new faces, a little bit of a sluggish performance against a team promoted and a bit of brilliance to win the game.
Yep.
We said that so many times last year about Madrid and games that were tight, and Benzema, Vinicius Jr. stood up and just did something out of this world. Again, we've had it today when you're thinking, right, they're going to take 4 or 5 off this team and they'll bring some subs on and it'll be a walk in the park. It takes a moment of magic. It takes Lucas Vazquez getting in there to win this game. So, as I think Robbo was saying in the commentary, the boys were saying, I don't think he'll be overly pleased with the performance, mm-hmm. but he'll be delighted with the 3 points.
No, but it's 3 points as well, and Alaba with that late goal. It's a little bit kind of part of the furniture now. He settled in so well, didn't he, last season,
yeah,
coming from Bayern.
I think the big question mark will be, you know, obviously maybe not in Ancelotti's mind, but, you know, ultimately, what's his strongest back four?
Yeah, Rudiger didn't have a great debut today, did he?
Well, he was playing on the right side of that centre-back partnership, and he's a left-footer, and people will say, well, it does kind of make a little bit of difference what side you're on. It's not a natural side, and he got caught out for that first goal, so I don't know. I mean, David Alaba's going to play centre-back. It's probably going to be one of Militao or Rudiger, otherwise one of them shifts to left-back, but, you know, Ferland Mendy's a natural left-back, so there's some choices to be made there. But I would be surprised if Antonio Rudiger, signing from Chelsea on a free transfer off arguably one of his best seasons, did not start for Real Madrid. I mean, I think it would be a shock to him as well when all said and done if he's left out the team.
Well, after the game, Sid caught up with David Alaba.
First touch, I think, straight into the back of the net. It's not bad, is it?
You're right, it's not bad.
Did you go on with, obviously I'm assuming that Ancelotti doesn't say, please go on and score the goal for me. What instructions did you go on with? At what stage did you think the game was at when it came for you to make an entry?
Yeah, after the 1-1, I think we wanted to make more pressure, wanted to really show the mentality to win this game. And this is how I guess we played after, especially in the second half.
What do you think, if anything, was missing in the first? What was it that made it so difficult to handle Almeria to start with?
I think scoring a goal. Almeria did a really great job, but still we had opportunities to score even after the 0-1. We tried to put pressure, tried to create chances and tried to score. This didn't happen in the first halftime, but well, when we came into the dressing room, we wanted to stay calm, wanted to play our game in the second part, and this is what we showed, I guess.
Did you also demonstrate today the strength in depth that Real Madrid have, that you're able to make changes and change the game, and that there's changes all the way through the squad now, possibly more than last season?
Yeah, I think we have, or I know that we have a really strong squad, a good team, and we showed, especially in the last season, what kind of character we have in our team and what kind of team spirit, and we want to keep going like this, and of course I think we have a good squad.
And having won the Champions League and La Liga last year, no loss of hunger for you this season? There'll be no problem in terms of motivation?
Oh, no, this was last season. We don't look back. We want to look into the future, and Real Madrid stands for success, and we want to be successful also this year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sid Lowe joins us now. He's been complaining how hot it is. We've heard it all, haven't we? Throughout the day.
I don't think he's mentioned it, has he?
What, what's it past midnight now, Sid? Must be a bit cooler for you.
It's not very much cooler. By the way, just to kind of explain what it's like in Almeria, they have a type of grass here that you're not normally allowed. They've been given special permission to have a type of grass that, that basically can survive in arid conditions, which means they're allowed to cut it shorter than would normally be the case. Because if you left this grass long, the ball would basically not move at all because it's so dry. That's just to explain how hot it is. I liked Alaba's final response there where he said, well, that was last season. But he did slightly let me down, David Alaba, or more to the point, I let the viewers down. Because when he was about to go on, although he didn't admit it in that interview, actually what Ancelotti said to him, and this is just classic Ancelotti, really was, go on and score a free kick, please.
Oh, perfect. Did he say please?
Well, I don't know if he said please. I would like to think he said please. He's a very polite man.
I know, he's a very...
I'll tell you what, though, it's one of the reasons that it just shows like this keep me going, that, you know, I didn't know up until 30 seconds ago that the ball doesn't move very well in long grass.
There you go, you see. Well, especially that
long grass, the ball doesn't move.
No, but this is... But this kind of grass is much more compact and much drier, which is why they have to cut
it
shorter,
Sid,
because it's so arid.
Don't do it. Don't listen
to
really, him, Sid.
Are we having a conversation about the density of grass at Almeria?
Right. Sid, obviously, when we looked at that starting 11, we thought, right, this is...
I figured that what I needed to do... figured that what I needed to do was raise the interest level after half an hour of moaning about Man United, which everyone already knows about. Well, we'll talk about grass.
So you went for grass.
I haven't had my moan about Man United, so that's right. Where I was in today. Anyway, Sid, let's take this serious.
Yeah, and obviously when we saw that starting 11 and we heard Ancelotti saying this week that he's going to rotate a lot more, obviously that was the plan to bed in some of these younger players that are coming through. Unfortunately, that plan was pretty much thrown out the window as the second half developed.
Yeah, and look, at half-time, as we were talking at half-time, we could see Luka Modric warming up. Even 5 or 6 minutes before half-time, sitting at the side of the pitch with all the crew here, we're saying, look, this is a game where Modric has basically got to come on straight away, hasn't it? A game where you get someone in to control the ball, to get it moving quicker, to get that circulation better, and because they needed him. And it went back to that midfield of keeping the ball away from the opposition. Because in the first half, at least, Real Madrid didn't always do that particularly well. Tchouaméni had a couple of big dangerous moments. Once when he lost the ball and Sadiq ran through and put it over. There was another one where he was quite fortunate to get away with being fouled or supposedly being fouled on the other edge of the area. Madrid weren't fluid. And so as you say, yeah, to an extent at least, they had to go back to what they know. And of course that meant Luka Modric, who is still unbelievably brilliant, even though he's getting on a bit now.
I think we can let you go now, Sid. You can go and get some air conditioning.
You can go and talk about lawnmowers and...
Well, go and have a chat to the grounds.
Do you want to know about the grass? Shall I tell you?
Oh, every game now, Sid. We don't know what grass they use on the pitch. Meanwhile...
I want a report from every stadium about the type of grass.
Right, there you are. He's gone now. Three games for you tomorrow. Athletic Club against Mallorca, Getafe Atleti and Real Betis against Elche. All of those games live on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Right then, things have been quite calm for PSG over the first couple of games. Well, the drama would ensue here. Not with the result, they beat Montpellier no problem, but this is the 24th minute. Kylian Mbappe takes the penalty, goalkeeper saves it. They get another penalty just before the break. Neymar takes the ball, keeps the ball, and then scores the pen to make it 2-0. The significance of that was magnified on Twitter as Porto Brazil tweeted, "Today in the PSG game, Neymar scored the goal and humiliated the goalkeeper during a penalty kick. Whereas Mbappe took his very poorly and missed it. After the game, the coach said Mbappe will be the first choice penalty kick taker for the season. Absurd." Meanwhile, another Twitter handle came out and said, "Now it's official, Mbappe is who takes the pens at PSG. Obviously, this is something contractual because there's no club in the world that Neymar would be second choice pen taker. None. It looks like because of the contract, Mbappe is the owner of PSG." Why are those two tweets so significant?
No idea.
Because Neymar liked both of those tweets,
right.
and hence, this is very much throwing gas on the fire.
Okay. And have we got no adults in the room?
What do you mean?
To look after these kids. is there no adults in Paris that can just say to the children, "Come on, children."
Well, Neymar's not a child.
"Come on, children. It's 5:30. It's past your bedtime."
Neymar knows exactly the significance of liking those tweets. Well,
and then, what is that, a publication in Brazil?
Yes.
Tweeting about a player missing a penalty. I get it, though. Well, I don't get it, but it is slightly frustrating if a player has missed several penalties and blah, 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 and that affects your team. But to be honest with you, I'll be honest with you, Dan. You know, a lot of stuff gets on my nerves.
Right.
I'm sick to death of these two, and particularly the antics of star players over stuff. Me.
Right.
It's not about who scores a penalty. It's not about who takes a penalty. It's about who wins the game. It's about who has success as a club. And this pair,
Was the exchange that we saw just before the second penalty. Remember, Mbappe had already missed one. So Mbappe's now saying, "Neymar, give me the ball. Give me the ball." Neymar obviously refuses to give Neymar the ball. And this story has garnered so much attention because of course, what happened in the summer. Mbappe turning down Real Madrid. Some saying that now he's in charge of PSG. That was his promise. And Frank, this is a story which is just going to go on and on, isn't it?
Yes, it will, and that's very sad because I will join Craig on the kids' world. You know, I'm ashamed when I see that because I was a football player and I never behaved like that. I was a penalty taker and never ever first. You know, and maybe I will have the chance to talk to Christophe. When you name somebody number one, it doesn't mean if he misses that the number two is going to take over. Never, never. A number one is a number one. I would have missed a penalty. I would have had another penalty. I would have taken it. Now, having said that, I think it's fair to say that Neymar is better in that kind of tools, kind of precision in that matter. He should be the number one because he's better. He has a cool blood for that. I think we can see that he's very confident, and we can see that the penalty that Mbappe took was very poor. But having said that, so Gatti should name Neymar number one. Had Neymar would have been number one and missed the first penalty, he should have had taken the second one because that's how it works. Never, ever a coach said, "You know what? If you miss the first one, somebody's going to take over." I said, what kind of thing is that, you know? You don't bring me confidence? It's me. It's me or it's not me? But if it's somebody else, it's somebody else. But it's up to the second. I had one time, I shot two penalties, same game. There was a third one. I said, it's too much. And that's one my own decision. I gave the ball to one of my teammates. But never somebody say, "Frank, you know, you shoot already twice, you score. Maybe I could..." No, that's not even a discussion. It's not a penalty gate. There is a number one. He's the number one. That's it. You don't try to find number two.
I did take the three in a game, remember?
Yes, you scored two and missed the third. We know the story.
But the whole point is that...
No, I didn't miss the third. He missed the third. I scored the third.
You have to accept sometimes. that story's changed in 30 seconds. But, you know, I think of Gaultier... This is how crazy it is. I think of Gaultier, who is supposed to be a bit of a... hard taskmaster and no nonsense. I think if he said to Mbappe, "Look, I think it'd be better if Neymar's taking it." He's such a big kid. He's going to probably go off crying and be in the huff. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'd hate to be at this football club, notwithstanding the money, and the salary and all that comes, all the trimmings that come with it. I'd hate to be in that dressing room, having to deal and listen to the antics of this pair on a daily basis, because that's not just a Saturday, you know, or a Sunday. You've got to imagine them at the training ground during the week.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's 7 days a week. And if you're a teammate of that, listening to that, thinking, I'd want to give them a good slap and say, it's not all about you all the time. There's another 15, 16 or 20 people in this squad trying to make this a successful season. I mean, it beggars. It's unsurprising.
Yeah, but Craig,
can I just show this video? Take a look at Mbappe. Yeah. Now, he's in the left-hand side of the video here. This is just before the break. Not happy, clearly, that he didn't get the ball passed to him. And it just and he just stops running. And it just seems... it seems a bit schoolboyish.
He's a very, very... I told you a year or so ago, you know, when he first came through, he seemed very grounded, great attitude, fantastic talent, obviously won World Cup as a teenager, all that sort of stuff. But that's out of order. That's, you know, players can make a bad decision. A player doesn't see him and goes the wrong way. That happens 10 times in a game, maybe more. But that, to me now, he now has just got so much of his own headlines in his head.
Right.
He now is just, he's turned into one of the most petulant superstars in this sport in the world now. He's gone from this grounded youngster who's super talented, super fast, and scares defenders to death, to still having that, but when it's not going his way, he turns in to the biggest kid in the playground. The biggest kid. He just goes and stands in the corner and folds his arms and doesn't get involved. I mean, that's just... I hate to see that.
Yeah.
I hate to see that. And that's telling me now as a player with just too much control. It's too much about him. It's too much in his head. He thinks it's all about him and him alone. And that's... For a guy so talented, Dan, I just hate to see the things that he's getting involved in these days.
Sorry, Frank. I just want a word from Shaq. We haven't heard from Shaq yet.
No, I was just going to say one of the best things about that last clip where Mbappe stops is the ball goes out to Lionel Messi, I think I'm right in saying. So imagine you upset that somebody decides to pass the ball to Messi in space as opposed to thread the eye of a needle to you. I mean, goodness me. That just changes the entire perspective. That makes it even worse. All I can do is echo everything that Craig and Frank just said. Keeping in mind that this is a PSG team that have to win the Champions League. It's Champions League or bust for them. And the reason that they haven't so far is because of cracks within their team, within their system that they have created. And now this is probably the biggest by the person who was tasked with overseeing the project. I remember us having the discussion around the PSG project when Mbappe re-signed. I said then that I couldn't understand what that meant, and I thought that was just football speak for covering up whatever nonsense you had in store. And as of right now, Mbappe seems determined to prove me right.
Frank, this is a mess.
Yeah, the thing is, If I were Christophe Galtier, I would go at the end of the game and say, Kylian, I love you. What the hell have you done? That's the last time you do that. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the star of the team or whatever it is. You don't do that because I have to manage. And if everybody does like to do, that's a shame. But we are responsible, bandits, medias. We are responsible. We put headlines on those players. They think they are allowed to do everything. And even if we do bad things, we have to talk about that and debate if it's good or not. We are talking about statistics all the time. They don't care about what they do. They just talk about what they do for the team. They just think about what they do for themselves. That's the thing. During that game, there is one thing where, you know, just so you know, that Hakimi didn't give the ball to Messi. Messi didn't say anything. But you should have seen his look towards Hakimi. So they all like that. They want all the ball, and we know we have only one ball.
Yeah, but Messi didn't stop running, Frank. Messi didn't stop running.
No. Of course. I'm not trying to diminish Mbappe behavior. It's a shame. I'm so ashamed of him right now because I love him so much. I can understand that he's doing that. There is an example to youth, to young players. He knows that he shouldn't behave like that. The guy who had the ball, I don't know who had the ball at the time, has to make a decision. And yeah, you choose Messi instead of Mbappe, that's not too bad, as Shaka said, you know. But I want to say that all those players, you don't give a ball to Ronaldo, I can tell you. Cristiano Ronaldo is going to look you bad. He's not going to stop running, maybe, I don't know. But he's going to look you bad because they want that. I never seen that when I was playing for Zidane. Zidane never had a bad look. I'm sure Cruyff never had a bad look. I'm even sure Maradona didn't have a bad look. So it's what we have now. It's what we are creating, emphasizing every movement of those players because they are stars.
It's an unfortunate thing to say, but Kylian, at this moment in time, Kylian Mbappe is out of control. He's out of, and he's, they've kind of allowed it to happen by this new contract, and it's all about you, and don't go to Real Madrid just yet, and you know whatever went on behind the scenes and the promises they gave him. But he's out of control. In a football parlance, he is... his persona is completely out of control. He can pretty much do as he likes. There's no comeback for him, or it seems that way, as somebody was, one of the boys was saying about Galtier getting in and telling him. I think it was Frank. But I don't know how much he'll listen, and I just feel he's crossed that line. He's crossed that line now where he just thinks it's just all about him. And he's completely, unless he reels himself back in a little bit, and I don't see any signs of it, he's a problem. He's a problem for a dressing room at the moment. And we used to say it was Neymar and one or two others was a problem. Unfortunately, that kind of attitude is a problem for the dressing room. Yes, they might get away with it in France and Ligue 1 and they're probably going to win that. But when it gets to the bigger picture, it's an issue.
No surprise then, after what we saw take place over this weekend, reports are now saying that Kylian Mbappe wants Neymar out of the club, Frank.
Well, that I don't know. That is not because Mr. Molina said that. I don't even know who Mr. Molina is. That is the truth, you know. As I always say, Kylian Mbappe is very important for PSG, but I don't think he takes those kind of decisions. And it's proven that Neymar is not going, especially with the game that he has. Christophe Galtier has absolutely the right of keeping Neymar. And if you don't want a player to try to sell him, you don't try to make him even better. So I don't think Neymar is on his way out. I don't think Mbappe has to say anything about that. I don't believe that. I never believe that. I don't think he's been asked to Mbappe what he thought about Neymar and if he wanted him to go out. I don't know where it comes from.
Just to clarify, Romain Molina, who Frank's talking about, is a journalist who sourced this report. Okay. So that's where it's come
right.
from.
But let me just go back to your dressing room. And I don't know if Shaq's got any experience of the teams that he played in, but I certainly have, and I think Frank will have as well, is I'm thinking back to players doing that, and that something so obvious as that, and stopping running. If he would have been at Man United at the time, you know, the Roy Keynes and the Gary Pallisters and the Bruces and the Schmeichels and them all, they would have torn him to shreds, no matter who you were.
Right.
If he had been at our Chelsea team in the mid-90s, with that kind of reaction from any superstar, I'm telling you now, that dressing room, and particularly Dennis Wise, who was the captain, would not have stood for that. Would not have stood for it. He would have been tore apart in the dressing room. Didn't matter if you were Gianfranco Zola or Gianluca Vialli. Didn't matter who you were. Eric Cantona at Man United. It didn't matter. You had players in those dressing rooms that weren't as talented as he was, or weren't as talented as other players. As soon as you get in, they were told, and it might have got ugly, but there's nobody there controlling this guy. To me, from the outside, it seems. And there's nobody strong enough within the dressing room, never mind the manager, within the players to reel this guy back in. Trust me, a few years ago in the 90s, the mid-90s, when there was a lot of good dressing rooms around, he had no chance of getting away with nonsense like this.
Shaka, when we've discussed before players not getting on who are on the same team, you guys always say, what do you expect, Dan? You know, you can't always have everybody getting on. You cite someone like Andrew Cole and Teddy Sheringham. We know that they really did not like each other when they were at Manchester United. Can they get over this situation, Neymar and Mbappe? Is it just one of those things, or is this deeper?
They can get over this if they take the approach that, use the example Teddy Sheringham and Andy Cole used, where they put the club before themselves. Now, the issue is, I think that horse is bolted. I think it bolted many years ago for Neymar. And I think, again, the Mbappe and this summer and the project, the discussion around the project, etc., I think that's when the horse bolted for Mbappe. That they now see themselves, rightly or wrongly, but they see themselves as bigger than the football club. So I think that time has long gone. And I know we're only a couple of weeks into the season, but more and more, from a professional standpoint, it's starting to look like turning down Real Madrid was the worst decision that Kylian Mbappe could have made for his career. Because from the time you walk into the Bernabeu, from the time you walk into Real Madrid, you know the club is bigger than the individual. The players will let you know, the managers, the ownership, and the fans will let you know. But Mbappe does not have those checks at PSG. So as of right now, he's just a runaway train. I know we're only a couple of weeks into the season. My mind may change, or he may change my mind, but from what we've seen so far, I can't see it any other way.
What do you think, Frank? Are we making too big a deal of all of this?
No, we have the right to emphasize what Kylian Mbappe did today. Like, we had the right to say that Neymar didn't play well, or didn't want to go, or wanted to go to Brazil instead of playing. No, we have the right to say that, and I think it's just fair. It's just fair because, as the guy said, never, never, ever it would have happened in the 90s, because somebody would have come and Denis Suárez would have come to Frank Leboeuf and said, well, who do you think you are? Okay, you won the World Cup. We don't care. Yeah. We are Chelsea. You play, you shut up, and you run. And that's what Marquinhos should do. I think Marquinhos, if he had seen that, he should have gone to Kylian and said, Kylian, what are you doing? That's the last time you do that. The last time, I tell you, next time we go to the shower room and I'm going to tell you how it works. Because it's how it happened before. We're belonging to a squad, not individual plus individual plus individual. It's everybody the same level, you know, the same level. Even the substitute had a word to say. So we have the right to say it's not good because we see it. No, Kylian Mbappe, you shouldn't stop and do that. Like, I don't care. I don't want to run because you don't want to give me the ball. No. That's not how football works. Never. It's not my philosophy. And we have to say it because it's for the sake of our football.
What would we do without Manchester United,
I know,
Kylian Mbappe,
I know,
and Neymar? Oh. Life would just be a struggle, wouldn't it?
Wait, talk about the Ballon d'Or. Who win the Ballon d'Or? Send it over the edge. I'm sure a lot more discussion on what's happened at PSG this weekend on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Gab is back from holiday, no Don, and Gab still is on holiday. There'll be Jules and Nadim then to break it down. All right, then, Serie A this weekend. We went through the results yesterday, didn't we? Milan with the victory, Atalanta into that late win as well on Sunday. Late win for Fiorentina. Lazio picking up all 3 points. Roma kicking off the season with a 1-0 win. Spezia with victory as well. 2 games to you on Monday. Napoli away against Hellas Verona and Juventus against Sassuolo. Don Hutchinson will be with us on tomorrow's show to give us his big takeaways from the opening weekend in Italy.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
That is it. That brings us to the end of quite a marathon show. But
no, I tell you what, I'm knackered.
There's more, Craig. Don't worry. Because Extra Time is next. Frank joins us, as does Shaka, to answer some of your Manchester United-related tweets. Hello, welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for getting in contact with us with your questions. Craig Burley is with us here.
I've been here 3 weeks off at this rate.
We've been here for quite a long time today, but it's been very enjoyable, hasn't it?
I've been sold one today on this.
Frank LaBeouf is with us late in France.
Did you say it's been enjoyable?
Yeah, it's been fun. Right. 1 o'clock in the morning in France, but look at Frank.
Look at
still
him.
Loving it. Shaq has just woken up. Frank, do you think the poor decisions Chelsea got today will bring the squad together even more to fight for Tuchel this season? Do you think the Chelsea squad will kick on after today's result because of all the intensity they displayed?
I don't think it's because of the poor referee decision. It's because it's more because of the way they played the game, the way they... For the first time and for a long time, I saw everything I wanted to see about players like Chelsea as the chance to have. They did everything needed to have a fantastic game and to make sure that they can stay at that level because they have the quality for that. So the confidence they can get from that game like that is the way they played, and that they for sure deserve better.
Does that happen?
Well,
when you have that sort of game, which is so intense, which the referees against you, it kind of brings you together a little bit more?
I don't know. I used to just go and bang my head on the wall about referees.
Yes. I'm sure they did the same about you.
Yes, quite often, actually. I don't know if it brings you together more. It's just when you're frustrating when you've played so well and that you feel... Whatever side of the fence you sit on, if you feel you've been wronged by the referees and the officials,
yeah,
you always got to blame somebody.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But I think it was just a good performance in terms of the type of football they played. But blindingly obvious, that not that we didn't know anyway, where they need to strengthen. They need a striker.
Shaka, has there been a time where your team has been involved in an altercation like the one between Conte and Tuchel after the game?
I can't think of any time.
No, that's all right.
Where managers have kind of squared up like that.
Managers?
Yeah.
Just a full...
Well, we can have a full...
Oh, yeah. I had one in the Midlands derby. I told you this.
I've had those.
Oh, you stopped. Leicester?
Yeah, I've had those.
How involved are you in them, Shaq?
He was sleeping.
Somebody. Huh?
How involved are you in the fisticuffs and the handbags of it all?
Oh, no, I'm a peacemaker, Dan. I'm trying to part everybody.
Yeah, I bet.
I'm not akin to violence.
Oh, yeah, the biggest person in the team.
I was involved in the one at Leicester. I was Derby captain at the time, and so we're like, it was all kicking off, Midlands Derby, game finished.
Right.
And everybody was getting a bit juicy.
It was footballers, you don't.
Well, they think they might have been. It was getting close to a punch until, I've told you this, until Eddie Akinbaye took his shirt off.
Right.
And then everybody went, oh, we're in trouble. And everybody ran up the tunnel. Eddie took his shirt off, right.
Did you take your shirt off not have the same effect?
I put it over my head and I hid behind one of the stewards. He took his shirt off. He was angry. They already had some big units in their team.
Right.
And then Eddie Akinbaye, the big striker, took his shirt off and went like that. I've never seen our dressing room door open as quickly. He's a big boy.
Wow.
Okay. I was ready to take them all on.
Yeah, right.
Frank? And then we come in and Jim Smith went, yeah, you lot.
No,
you want a fight after the game.
I never I never seen a coach, two coaches fighting, but I have a story to tell you. I once played against Ajaccio in second in a League Two with Strasbourg, and we won 1-0. But there, you weren't allowed to win. Like I said, you know, you were threatened, you know, if you had the chance to win, and we won. And so player knew that so much and were so scared, they ran into the dressing room. So he upset the fans and also the opponent. So he started a big fight everywhere.
Wow.
And I knew the coach of the opponent, and he was a friend of mine, friend of my agent, blah, blah, blah. And I came very calm to the dressing room, and somebody was in front of the door, and I said, well, can I go? And he opened his jacket, he had a gun. He said, no, you can't come in. Crazy story. And so the coach saw him, said, no, he's a friend of mine, so let him go. He said, oh, okay, please, you can go. Like it was in 92. In 98, when we won the World Cup, I went on holidays in Corsica, and the guy was there. And I saw him, and he came to me and said, well, do you remember that game? We had fun.
Did he still have the gun?
You know? And no, I didn't check. But
my goodness, crazy.
That was another level.
That was another
time.
The old days were better.
The old days were, yeah.
I remember when Martin Keown got sent off at Stamford Bridge for fighting with Mark Hughes. Because, you know, Sparky, nicest man in the world, whenever he crossed the line,
yes,
wanted to kill centre-halves. Because he just... Mark, why do you hate centre-half so much? They've been kicking me all my life, and Mark, so I just want to fight them. So anyway, Martin got reeled in,
yep,
got sent off, and as he was coming up the tunnel, he saw Graham Ricks, one of the coaches at Chelsea, who used to be at Arsenal as a player when Martin Keown was a youngster. And Martin sought some solace with Graham Ricks about why he'd been sent off as he was coming up the tunnel, to which point Graham Ricks just took one run and kicked him right in the middle, between the legs.
Wow.
Yes. It's over. I tell you, there's a lot of nice people around in those days. He went, Rixie, and what happened was, bang, oh! Very sore.
Goodness me.
Nice people, but you wouldn't have lasted back then.
Well, I wouldn't have lasted, definitely not.
I know about a manager getting headbutted, but I'm not going to name names.
Okay.
Just to leave that one out.
Tuchel has the height and reach, but Conte seems like he has the inner fire.
Yeah.
I say Conte wins by TKO in the 10th. What do you say?
Well, he could get a lot of undetected blows to the ribs in. There's no doubt about it.
I go Conte all the time.
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Conte's not giving up, is he?
I mean, Tuchel looks to me like one of them, doesn't he?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Conte's got that little nasty from the playing side of it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Although I would be interested to know, if talking about pulling hair on the pitch today with Cucurella, I would be interested to know if there was any hair pulling in this fight, whether Antonio Conte's hair would actually stay in place.
Right.
Bearing in mind, he's had quite a bit of work there.
Yeah.
I don't think that's news to anybody.
No. But,
you know,
but I think the work has been stellar enough that it would be a good test
of the aforementioned stellar work.
Yes.
If Tuchel went for the hair pulling,
right,
and he went, oh,
yeah,
my God, there seems to be I've got hairy hands.
Right.
So I don't think he wants to be down that road.
Right. Who are you going for, Shaq? Conte or Tuchel in a fight?
I think Conte gets disqualified for too many low blows.
Ah, oh, yes. He'd find a ladder, a chair, the whole shebang. Yeah. Frank?
I don't want to see that fight. The guy is too big and the other one is too small, so it will be ugly. But I go for Tuchel because I think if he hits him, the other one is too small, he can't reach the body of Tuchel. So
no, but
I give
a little terrier, isn't it?
But it's a bit like Wenger when he had the little tit for tat with Mourinho.
No, it's not.
Well, because he's a big, skinny guy.
Yeah, Mourinho's I think Conte and Tuchel bring more to a fight than those two would.
Nah. Yeah, yeah. He barks like a terrier. He barks. He doesn't hit. What, you know, like small dogs, they bark a lot, but they don't go.
Oh,
small
okay.
Big dogs, they don't say anything.
Conte's got the Dennis Wiser
about
him.
You know that,
Tom. Conte's got the wisey about him. He'd be pulling the hairs in his legs and everything, right, all that nasty stuff. It just annoys you. Right. Just when Tuchel thinks he's got him in a lock, he'd be pulling the hairs in his calves and all that, yeah, biting him.
Oh,
anything to win.
Like the world needs to see.
Anyway,
do you guys think the occasional managerial and/or player scraps are good for the game, the drama of it all, or do you wish that that would basically go away.
No, there's no scraps. I mean, it's hard to think back to when somebody actually threw a punch.
Yeah, it's just
so
all,
we don't. Thankfully, we don't
it's
really
all
want.
Pantomime,
we don't really want to see that. There's multiple cameras at the game, so players know.
No.
It is a bit of a pantomime, but I actually, I don't know. I mean, I quite enjoyed that today.
Yeah,
side,
I enjoyed it.
Just it showed that it matters.
Yeah.
And it cares. Yeah. You know I mean, so.
Did you enjoy it, Shane?
I think that kind of. Yeah, I think that kind of thing happens more than people realise. You know, as Craig says, rarely people throw punches, but it does get really heated, you know, most of the time away from the camera. But that kind of thing happens, and it's part, it's just a part of the game now.
Good.
Have we got time for another question? For Shaka, did the pulling of Cucurella's hair remind you of Peter Crouch and Brent Sancho in the World Cup 2006, Trinidad and Tobago against England? Do you remember that?
No. Yes.
Yeah. So it was the opening
goal,
wasn't it? Yes,
I do. A number of the English pundits at the time said, "Well, if you don't want to get your dreadlocks pulled, then don't have dreadlocks." I wonder how many of them said that today.
Yeah.
Still has me a little bit bitter. In case anybody was wondering.
Was it 2-0 that game, Shaq? Who was the guy who scored the goal against you?
I can't remember, Dan. I'm not sure he ever went on to do anything else in the game.
No, didn't he score in an FA Cup final against you as well? I seem to remember.
Gerald, yeah.
I can't remember, Dan.
No, I know. What's that noise in your background, Frank, that we can hear?
I don't know.
It's like a banging noise.
It's his money machine. Just counting his money.
Oh, I think that might be possible. That might be there is an electrical wire alongside the house, the main house, to make sure that birds and rodents don't go underneath the roof, because the roof is made of, it's not a normal roof, I don't know what you call that. It was from 300 years ago. So I guess it's the electrical thing, the bing, 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 comes out every 10 seconds maybe.
So that's
I don't hear it.
Killing the birds trying to get into your house.
Killing has sleep
as
well.
No, it doesn't kill anybody. I protect every animals. I care about any animals. So it's just to scare them. That's it, to get out. That's it.
I thought you were rich. Having your house that's 300 years old, Frank. Might need to update.
With no roof.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I have a roof. Yeah, come on. I will find the word, you know, and then I will tell you, but it's a 300 years old, yeah, even more, 311 years old house. So, yeah, you have to take care of it and make sure that you don't have anything.
You can always renovate it with that money you hide in Luxembourg.
There you are, you see.
It's not a problem.
Don't mention the Luxembourg money. Got into trouble last time.
I did renovate my house. You know, I will tell you how much it cost me. I did that.
Is it a thatched roof, Frank? Do you know what that is?
Is that
yes, exactly.
Roof?
Yeah, there
exactly.
We go.
That's
there
what
you
it is.
There you are. Perfect.
You know how much it cost? I have to change it next year. It costs 100,000 euros to change it. The roof.
Oh, poor Frank.
Sorry. Right.
To change your roof.
It will last another 300 years. You're good.
Yeah.
So it's why I need another ESPN contract, please.
This is really connecting with our demographic. roof. I was
sure.
Talking.
Well, if you buy a house with a straw roof, what do you expect?
There you go. Last question.
I thought the last one was the last one.
Well, apparently we have to do this one. As a defender, did you guys raise your arms? Oh. No. Which one? The Forest question. Da, da, da. All right, Craig, how happy were you when Notts Forest won their first game in the
Nottingham Forest. Notts County.
Won their first game in the Premier League in 23 years.
I did watch a bit of it today, actually.
Your grandson, obviously, is
I'm
a
not sure
fan.
If he was
did
there.
Did he go?
I don't know.
Oh, why didn't you find out?
I was prepping this show.
Yes.
I was.
There you are.
It was a big win for them, wasn't it, at home. It's going to be a hard slog this season.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Did you see what Shaka was doing then?
Yeah, sleeping.
No. Yawning. Shaka, why were you yawning when we were talking about Nottingham Forest?
He yawns, of course he yawns.
I wasn't yawning, that's a lie.
What were you doing?
Did not yawn. Just sitting looking at the camera, that's all.
Stretching your mouth. That is it. We are done. Frank.
No, I was not yawning.
Frank, good luck with the birds and the thatched house.
Yeah, and let us know how many birds you kill.
I can't believe he's killing birds to protect his roof.
That's don't not... kill Berg. Don't stop saying that, you know? Come on. People don't believe what Dan Thomas says about me. I don't hate Neymar and I love Berg.
On that note, if we're just switching that on now. we'll be back tomorrow. Mark Rattenberg joining us to talk us through some of those big decisions in the Chelsea game.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at LectricEbikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LectricEbikes.com.